Let's start with our experiences. I would like to give the floor first to Mr. Ken Cook. Mr. Ken Cook comes from the Welsh European Funding Office in Wales. He is the head of finance and business, and he has a presentation for us. I think you have a microphone there that you can take. Please, the floor is yours.
Am I working? Can you hear me? Can everyone hear me?
Of course. Yeah.
Okay, thanks very much to colleagues in the Commission and to Amparo for editing my presentation down, so hopefully it will fit within the 20 minutes. I did time it, and it did seem to work. Okay, can we... Oh, that's my... Right. I wanted to talk about the Wales context today, but just perhaps a couple of words to begin with around the Managing Authority, which is what I'm part of. We deal with the ESIF funds. We are not, just to stress the point that people like me are not investment professionals. We are boring civil servants who spend our lives dealing with rules and regulations. But it is quite exciting to get involved in this sort of thing. Wales is part of the UK, United Kingdom, and there's a little blow-up map there that just shows it. It's quite a mainly a rural geography. There is some urban conurbation in the north and in the south, and in the south and southeast. It's interesting to note, I think, that the economic axis from Wales runs from west to east. It doesn't run north-south. So if you look at the south here, the economic axis runs across through to Bristol and to London. In the north, it runs through to Liverpool, Manchester, and we've got Leeds over here. So there isn't, there's no north-south axis. A few statistics, not too many. Our population is about 3 million, just over 3 million, so around the same size as Albania. We're a bit larger than Lithuania. Anyone from Lithuania today? No. Twice the population of Estonia, but we're only about a third the population of London. So it's spread out. Our density of population is very low. Gross value is 73 billion. Which is about 72% of the UK average. Unemployment in Wales at the moment is running at round about 6.7%. It varies very greatly. There are some areas where unemployment is up as high as 30%, but somewhere in the Cardiff region it's a lot lower. We have two regions for the structural investment funds, West Wales and the Valleys. That's the darker colour. That's a less well-developed area. And East Wales, which is the lighter colours on the far side, which is the more developed. And we have a total, we in the Managing Authority, total funds, ERDF and ESF, of nearly 2.5 billion. That's across five programmes altogether, two less developed, ERDF, ESF, less developed, more developed, and an Ireland Wales programme, ERDF. In terms of the economic mix or the demographics for businesses, this is just a quick slide. I tried not to populate this with too many numbers because that can be quite mind-boggling at events like this. So it's just a picture that shows you the sort of makeup of the Wales business environment. Agriculture is a very, very important part of the Wales economy, but it's not the biggest. It's construction. This one probably hides a multitude of sins. Distribution, hotels, restaurants, that's probably where we find most of our tourism businesses in that sector, which is a growing sector within Wales. In terms of the demographics, we have over 230,000 enterprises in Wales. This is not dissimilar to many other places, I expect. 95% of those are micro businesses, less than 9 employees. I did a comparison with London, and the graph looked very similar, which is interesting. I was expecting it to be different. We have very few large companies, but we have sort of quite a solid lump of those small and medium-sized SMEs, sort of 10 up to 250. On the far side of the slide, it's sort of just a quick indication of the turnover per employee. average turnover for the SMEs and by employee. So no surprise that you'll see that the larger companies have are more efficient in terms of their turnover per employee. So issues that we faced, I have to say the scale of the market failure in the Welsh economy has been very difficult to pin down. And I'd be interested to hear other people's experience of this. The range has been from one end, £300 million, that's about €500 million per annum, up to £700 million per annum. So our best academic estimate at the moment is that it is around £500 million, which is about €700 million per annum. The surveys we've had done indicate that some 66% of Welsh SMEs, sort of in that range earlier on, haven't been getting the finance they needed. Comparing to the rest of the UK, 74% have been able to access the finance they need. Sorry, 66 have got the finance, which means 34 haven't. But 74% across the UK is the average for getting finance. There's the market failure gap I just mentioned. In terms of our design and where we were going, we were very keen to ensure that our financial instruments managed to reach a critical mass. It's important to us that they're able to deliver effectively, economically and efficiently. And there seems to be a minimum size that we need to get a critical mass. Another issue we face in Wales, and again, I'd be interested to hear what other people experience is this, is for a long time, it's been very much a grant-dependent culture. So with the ESIF funds, we're now moving further away from that. In terms of my programme, the part I'm managing, we have no grant funds whatsoever through our programme. We do under RD&I, but in terms of business support, grants to small businesses, we have none. We've had some work done on that, which I'm very happy to share with people in terms of the rationale for having grants or not. We're very keen. One of the drivers for us is about mobilising the private sector. We want to make sure that our financial instrument... I'm talking about access to finance for SMEs. Sorry, I haven't probably made that clear. What we're looking is not to displace or crowd out private sector investment. I think our experience is that has happened in the past. We want to ensure that doesn't happen now. So a couple of slides later on, I try and sort of draw this in a picture, which might explain that better. We had a review of our business support advice services in Wales and how they were coordinating with other services such as grant support or with financial instruments. And the outcome of that was that they felt there could be a lot of room for improvements. So we're very keen, again, to ensure that our financial instrument and our business support and advisory services are brought together and coordinated and integrated. So it's a wraparound service for the SMEs that are out there. Targeting, this is reflected in our operational programme for ERDF. We're targeting high-growth startups. Having said that, we accept that it's quite difficult sometimes to actually identify who is a high-growth startup, so there's some risk in that. High-growth expansion, so those are existing SMEs that have capacity to move into new markets, develop new products. One of the issues I think we face, so going back to the slide where I said 95% of our SMEs are micros, that's 218,000 out of 230. There's a high proportion within that 218,000 that are what we call lifestyle businesses. So they're sort of single person operators. They've got no intention to... they're very happy where they are. They fill a space and they're happy to stay in that space. They don't want to grow. They don't want to employ anyone. These are sort of organisations and little bodies that have actually taken up quite a lot of grant support in the past. So that's disappearing. So one of the things we may be focusing on SMEs that have five or more staff. That's not to say that SMEs with less than five are not going to be eligible for support. Particularly in terms of RD&I equity investment, you might find very small, two or three person enterprises. And speaking of RD&I, we need to make sure that we align with the smart specialisation strategy as well. the final bullet here is around clarity of purpose, and it's just a general observation. It's something that I've experienced now working with financial instruments for the last 5 years. One of my jokes is that I'm actually only 27. They didn't get that, did they? Never mind. It's been a struggle at times to move through the sort of culture barrier where public servants, public authorities have been giving grants for a long, long time. What we're doing is trying to shift that, as I said, about away from the culture, the grant culture. It can be, there is some tension there at times. How am I doing for time, Alparo? I think I'm okay. Just a quick run through some of the experiences. We're fortunate in Wales that we're not coming from a standing start. 2007-2013 programmes, we've had 157 million Jeremy funds, that's 220 million euros, which was part financed by the EIB. Thank you, Bjorn. and that's 99% invested. It's very nearly all been used up. We've supported nearly 600 SMEs with a mixture of debt and equity. 3,400 jobs have been created as a result of those investments. It's also about 8,000 jobs we think have been safeguarded, so that, you know, retained jobs in the economy through that investment. We've managed to lever in, on top of the 157, 195 million or 273 million euros. We started working on our 2014-2020 financial instruments back in 2013. I'm not sure it was a good idea because we were so far ahead, really, of any regulations or the guidance coming out, that we've had to sort of go back and revisit some of the work that we've done. However, I think it's been a useful exercise in terms of bringing people together around the functions of financial instruments. We undertook a high-level assessment of market gap, market failure, as part of our programme level evaluation for 2014-20. That identified a number of areas, not just access to finance for SMEs, but also in terms of potentially urban development. There's been some thinking around energy efficiency, but nothing's developed on those lines yet. Urban development looks like it's going to be on the horizon for us. It's something we're going to start working on next. It also, as part of that, it looked at the opportunities under the rural programmes, EAFRD, and it's indicated some possibilities there in terms of perhaps guarantee funds for farm loans. Not something we do with ERDF, I hesitate to say. Okay. The initial conclusions, and specifically around access to finance, it was the market failure seemed to indicate that a fund around about a similar size to the one we'd had already, with a mixture of debt and equity, would be the one to have. And they reflected in our negotiations with the Commission on the operational programme. We're now concluding the very specific ex-ante assessment on access to finance for SMEs. The outstanding work there really is about finalising the investment strategy. I'll come on to that a bit later when I talk about the space that we fill. So what we're looking at, and we're planning to have these in place by September at the latest, is an equity fund which will focus on early stage RD&I companies and also growth and expansion companies, which will be about 112 million euros, and a debt fund slightly smaller to support growth SMEs. So we're very much targeting the ESIF funds on growth and expansion. And we're doing a co-investment model this time. Now, this is something we need to learn about because we haven't done that before. So, again, I'll be very interested, perhaps with experiences of other colleagues, you know, how do we capture the co-investment properly? And that would be across two ERDF programmes in the two regions I showed you. And those are the two specific objectives under our operational programme, under the ERDF operational programme. We've had many conversations with colleagues on the ESF side. There's been thoughts about microfinance, microcredit, but in the UK there are already government schemes, the startup loan company, etc. So the space is already being taken by other operations, so we didn't want to put something in place that would just dilute the marketplace. Right, here's my little pictures. I'll try and explain this quickly. I don't want to take too much time. What we're trying to show here is that a pure market investor, just working on perfect information, there's a point where the net return for the market investor meets the needs of the market investor in terms of the risk he's taking and the level of investment he's taking, and it also meets the needs of the investee SME. So if the cost is too high, the SME won't take the loan. If the cost is too low, the investor won't make the loan. Works quite slightly differently with equity, but it does transfer. On the other hand, public sector investors, the private sector investor is involved, is concerned about financial return. The public investor, so public authorities, is also taking into account, on top of the financial and public, the financial returns, the public benefit returns. So this line here, in terms of the risk taken or the level of investment, moves slightly to the left. So the public sector investor will go further. And what we're looking at in broad terms is that there are many, many viable SME proposals that are in this space that the private market investor won't go to because it's beyond his risk profile or beyond how much return he's going to make in terms of the investment. So we think there are a lot of viable deals here and there's a gap to fill there. And that's where we're trying to target our financial instrument. Further along, we've still got viable deals, but they're not viable in terms of a financial return, even for the public sector. And that's where we may see a space for grant support alongside the financial instrument. And just to... I suspect it took me ages to try and sort of develop this because it's a multi-dimensional thing and trying to show it in two dimensions. And I think we're trying to get across here the principle that we are trying to get to is this is where the private sector is investing already, this space. It loves this. You know, it's fine. It's all within its parameters. We have all these viable deals here which are beyond the perfect private sector investors' parameters. However, the public sector benefit, we see, you know, this might be jobs created or new products coming into the market that are more energy efficient, all sorts of things that may not generate viable returns. If we can sort of de-risk some of this by investing alongside the private sector, this is where we're hoping to mobilise more private sector deals. So these are deals that perhaps would not have happened. Another way of drawing this is to put that red line, which is, if you like, our investment funds from the ERDF, as a line down there, which just moves that line across. It doesn't get you an awful lot more deals. It's actually crowding out all this potential private sector investment. I'm very happy to talk to anyone in detail about that. It's a bit difficult to represent in two dimensions because it is a sort of three-dimensional picture. This is where we think our investments from the ERDF will go. This is where we think it's more likely that it will generate and make sure that more deals happen, deals that would not have happened. One of the other ways of doing it is to actually use the ERDF or our financial instruments to do deals here at this line. So it's beyond the private sector limit in terms of the financial return they're going to make against the risk and the level of investment and fill all that up. So you could draw that red space down there. Yes, you know, there'd be more deals happening, but what we're then doing is because we think that the private sector will come in here if they're being de-risked and the risk is being shared. Yeah? But if we fill that space with our own funds, then we're crowding out the private sector. That's the picture I was trying to get across. Does that make sense?
I think so.
pictures. I like pictures. They try and tell the story without too many numbers. This is another, just again, it's a concept, and I talked about the integration earlier on between the services. And it's just to show the picture that what we're trying to do with and use our financial instrument to sort of drive part of this is with SMEs as the central point, is that we our business advice and guidance services are integrated with our own investment funds, that there's links into private sector investors either through here or through the SMEs bringing their own. And we're also looking at, grant non-repayable financial support. Now, that's outside the ERDF funds, but we are looking at a viability gap grant, which was sort of one slide back, to go alongside our financial instrument. That's actually the last slide, but I just made a quick note that perhaps a couple of things that I'm particularly keen to learn more about. I've mentioned already in terms of we need to learn how to sort of manage co-investment so that it's regular. We can collect the co-investment. And it's we can say it's there, it's real, match funding. Alongside that, I think we're struggling in understanding how grants work alongside financial instruments. It sounds very simple in principle, that you put a grant in on top. But then you've got to mix in the co-financing elements and the state aid issues around that, because the grant might be one state aid regime and different. So it's just complex, and we've not done it before, so we need to learn about that. And also, to just as a final thing, just to say, I've talked very much here about access to finance for SMEs and ERDF programme. In Wales, we are looking around, I mentioned ESF earlier on, but I'm also doing some work with my colleagues who are working on the EAFRD and EMFF programmes, because they're now thinking more seriously about the potential for an investment approach. And that, I think, concludes my entertainment for today. That's my email address. If anyone's got any further questions, you can please email me. I always put the comment on the bottom, the disclaimer, that this is me here talking. I'm not necessarily representing the Welsh Government in this regard. Just in case I've said anything wrong, I might get a slap when I get back, but I can say, well, no, I haven't said you said it. Is that okay? I think that's just on time. Thank you very much.
Thank you for showing us how these efforts for going for a financial instruments culture are progressing in Wales. Thank you very much. Are there any other questions for Mr. Cook? No? Yes, please.
Maybe one question without committing the government of Wales. You mentioned there were £157 million on the previous experience. How many do you plan? I haven't seen any figure for the new one. I don't know if it was captured.
I might have run across it quite quickly. It is on one of the slides. And I have it actually down here. Just wait a second. It's the fund will be in two... we're not doing guarantees. We're not doing guarantees. The guarantees are being operated by UK government already. But we're looking at an equity fund, which will be around €112 million, and a debt fund of €102 million. So it's about £214 million. I think it's a similar scale to we've had now, that £150-160 million mark. That haven't quite been finalised yet. This is what our ex-ante assessment is telling us. It's a lot less than the market gap that's there. We are basing it, if I go back to the other diagram, where we're trying to mobilise as much private sector investment as we can. Our sort of base calculation is on a one-to-one basis in terms of co-investment. We think we can achieve higher than that, and what we're hoping is that we will... be able to mobilise more private sector to make a lot more deals happen. So we may get a higher co-financing or co-investment ratio than we plan. But we think based on one-to-one seems prudent, we're certain we can achieve that. If we do better, that's great. Does that help? Yeah.